Hi everyone, welcome to the Cover Mindset podcast from McGinley Coaching. I'm your founder and host, Lauren McGinley. Today we're joined by Lewis Walker. How are you, Lewis?
Very good, thank you. How are you?
Oh, I'm good, thanks. It's just a bit -5, -6 out there, so I'm just happy I'm inside at the moment. But can you just tell the listeners about a background of yourself, where you are in the world and your kind of coaching journey so far?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I've got Scottish parents. One was born, my father was born in Perth. My mother was from Aberdeen. Can't really hear any accent though. But I lived in Belgium for 20 years, and so I basically went through the Belgian football system, Belgian youth system, let's say. And then when I was 20, I went to Bournemouth to study sports management. I did a lot of coaching at my amateur club back in Belgium, but lately working for a Dutch club in the Netherlands called Ado Den Haag, which is located in The Hague in the Netherlands. We coach young kids, but we also coach people that have disabilities, for example, people that have problems with addiction. And that's more my kind of field, so I enjoy giving football trainings, but I prefer football trainings to have a kind of societal value to them.
Yeah, because we talked about off air. Obviously, the biggest thing in football is giving back. You know, and we was connected through LinkedIn. I was interested because the biggest thing I see now is grassroots and community development, and how the power of football can help so many people. You know, with as you say, addictions to people with a disability. But just interested in the things in Belgium, you know, because obviously there's a cross border between Belgium and Holland and the Netherlands. You said you've kind of worked in the went to Bournemouth. Is it something you've always tried to look into, like using football as a power, but not the coaching, but learning about the environmental side of it, the how to deal with different parts of the leadership, how to deal with different parts of you know, finance, and also being part of a bigger team? Because in Scotland there's so many different, there's I think every club's related to a community trust, and that's the heartbeat of the community. Is that something that you were kind of passionate about when you started your kind of journey off?
It's different. Well, when I was in Belgium, I hadn't really thought of the whole social side of football because I hadn't been confronted with it. I wasn't brought into touch with it. But I went to South Africa on a volunteering journey where I did some coaching for 5 weeks, I think it was. And what you realise is that even children that have absolutely nothing, when they have a ball at their feet and they're playing football together, they have a moment where they can forget about their troubles. And when I realised that when I was there, I was like, oh, football is more than what I knew it as anyway, because for me growing up, football was training a couple of times a week and then working towards that all-important match on a weekend. But it kind of put things into perspective for me. I think as well, when I looked at the football club I used to be at, the facilities were pretty decent. It was a all right standard of football. It wasn't elite. But what I've started to realise more and more is that there's more modern football clubs popping up left, right, and centre are focusing more on the development as players, as people. And you also see at elite level, of course, nowadays in academies, which I think is quite a positive development. So I would say after that trip to South Africa and studying sports management, that's when it really started to click, like, oh, football is really enjoyable to watch, but it can also do much more than just please the fans with good results, let's say.
Yeah, and I think you can use football to use for like transferable skills, you know, like I love, people know I'm obsessed with reading, you know, like I've got a limit on my library card, my wife's library card, probably my son's library card, and I've probably got a Glasgow one, but we don't tell my wife that, but I love reading. But the biggest thing I learn is when you're trying to use different skills that you like, negotiating skills, or you have to deal with conflict, or how to deal with complaints, how to deal with people that are maybe not, you don't want to say in the word normal, but the ones that maybe need a lot more help, the ones that just a bit that once a week in the football, you know, going to the community, in the Netherlands, I know it's very, very much it's quite a direct, you know, approach, some of it, just because if you see Serena Wiegmann, you've got like in Ten Hag at the top, like they get. But see, when it comes to the community, is it very much in the kind of job you're in, is it everyone is welcome, so therefore there's no judgment, there's just that way of trying to help that person, maybe that improve that person's day by that, even that hour, because again, football is I think is the best sport in the world, but you can use it to just fulfill that person's day, you know, for that week, create friendships. So that's something that the club and the kind of job you're in to try and develop that kind of program for everyone.
Yeah, I mean, our department is tightly connected to the other departments of the club, so we try and approach community work as a whole, not just as like a separate island of work.
Yeah.
So, for example, what we do is community work, but to get more attention for our work, we would combine forces with the marketing department. The commercial department, obviously, if they can tell partners of the club that we're doing community stuff, that makes them more interested in perhaps providing something commercially to the club. But there's loads of different aspects of the community side of football that people maybe don't realise that how important it is within the football clubs, let's say. Yeah, I would say everyone's welcome. If you're a woman, you're a man, you're a boy or a girl, you have a disability or you don't have a disability, you're 60 plus or 60 and over, or you're a young child that's interested in playing football every week. What we try and do is, we've got this kind of cradle to the grave concept, which sounds a bit...
That's the Dutch way there.
Not pushing people to the grave, thankfully. But it's more like when you're born, you can register with the club at the hospital. So they basically start the whole journey with the club. And every birthday that they have until they're 9, for example... they'll get a present from the club, for example. From there on in, they get into touch with our community projects. They can start joining our kids club and stuff. And then once they get older, they can join our boot camp activities. So what we envisioned was that we want to be in touch with this person throughout their entire life to kind of make them known that the club sees them as well, if that makes sense.
Yeah, like it's like a... You're trying to create that bond, you know, like because you see, obviously, you've got the Netherlands, you've got obviously Eindhoven and Amsterdam, and you've got big clubs. But I always say, you know, everyone wants to go to the big clubs, and there's nothing wrong with that. But sometimes the ones that are a little bit smaller are actually the ones who create more, you know, for the person, because they. Yeah. You've got the, obviously, you have different parts of the Eredivisie, and you've got the women's side too, but see the programmes that you run, obviously, there's going to be like walking football and disability football. And, is it more likely that if you give a little bit more to the person, like that birth or the present, then they feel more part of the, like a family? You know what I mean? Like a family... kind of feel to it, because I look at a lot of clubs and there's just a name, but there's no like connection. But is that something that you try to do with the kind of programs that you run? Because I would be interested to see. I know there probably is hundreds of programs you run, but maybe one or two that are really popular that people are, you know, like camps and all that are really decent. What's the kind of ones that are works for everyone, so therefore it kind of has that feeling of a kind of family?
Well, it's an interesting point you make, because that's something I've been thinking about a lot lately, is how connected do I still feel to the club that I support, which, just for your information, is Manchester United. Has been since I was 5 years old. But that club has grown so big and it's turned into such a business that it doesn't really feel like you have many connections to them, because there's a lot of millionaires playing at that club. Obviously, they're earning tons of money, whereas our club that I work at the moment, other than Hag, is quite a local club. So it's really for the local people. It's really a club from the city, basically. It's the only big club in the city as well. So I think that makes a big difference, you know, because it's much easier to get the players involved, for starters. They're not these prima donnas that you perhaps have at the bigger clubs. I would say some of the projects that they feel most connected to the club with, would say are things such as the boot camp, because we have this thing, it's called the Adar an Haigh Foot Camp, which is basically boot camp of football activities. They're basically real fans, and we're helping real fans of the club get fit by playing football. And they all get, obviously, their kits, the Adar an Haigh kits, if they join and stuff. So I think the fact that they can improve their lives while also being connected to their favourite football club is quite a powerful thing, certainly because a lot of these people that weren't really listening to their doctors when they were telling to get into shape would then see something on their club and like, oh, well, this is my pride and joy. If they say I need to get fit, then maybe I should pay more attention. So that's, I think, the power of football in a nutshell. But it's not because maybe if you're not interested in football, let's say, just put it that way, it doesn't mean that you still can't be connected to the club. Like, we do school projects about bullying as well. But even if you're not fully connected to the club or football in general, there are still options for you to feel part of the whole grand scheme of things like that.
Yeah, because in Scotland, there's a thing called fans, football and training, which is basically a similar kind of role.
Yeah, football fans and training, yeah.
And it's really interesting because I've listened to, is it the European Football Development Network, and they do a lot of, it's quite an interesting prospect of different ideas. But I'm looking at this, the kind of role that you have, you know, and it seems like it's quite a senior role, you know, you're in control of, like, you have a kind of team around you. See, when, obviously, there's another question to it, but you have to deal with people, you know, like, that are, you know, coaches to marketing and even the board. How, what's the kind of skills that you need to work in this kind of industry where you're the kind of main person for a lot of things, but you don't want to let the kids down, you know, but you need to deal with, you have to recruit the right coaches, the right people. Is it something that, is there a kind of, like a philosophy of the kind of community trust, or is it very much a, we believe in the person and let them just basically, because a lot of people recruit on CVs and qualifications, when sometimes the best person could be the person who's actually in your, kind of, like maybe a boot camp, you know, person, or someone who's actually a fan, but they've not got the qualifications. How do you try and, you know, work your way up and down the ladder so therefore you have that kind of the right person in the right job?
Yeah, good question. For me, well, the basis for me is that I think your physical health and mental health is in a good spot before you start the whole process of looking for jobs, because, you know, if you're not feeling too healthy, not feeling too great, that'll impact your energy levels, and then when you're looking for jobs in general at that point, it's providing more of an obstacle than it normally would. But I think the skills, the soft skills and hard skills that you need depend on the different aspects of the journey. For example, when you're doing more of the office work, what I think is important that you can work in a structured manner, that you can deal with pressure when it comes along, that you can manage multiple tasks at the same time, you can manage your time, you get disciplined as well so that you can be relied upon to do your job. But a lot of it is also communication. You know, if you're someone that struggles to have conversations with people and sell the story of what you're doing to people, that'll make the job that we do quite difficult, because we're trying to sell the value, or at least tell people what the value is of our projects. And if you can't sell the idea properly, and then you won't get people joining the projects, you won't get people funding the projects, you'll also lose a bit of support within the club, let's say. I would say negotiating is a very important one in football in general. I think if you can negotiate well, there's loads of moments in a career in football, let's say, where you'd need that. For example, your own personal terms, of course. But if you're trying to prove your value towards the club as well, because that's also not it's not as easy as it sounds. And in some clubs, I think the community department isn't appreciated as it is in other clubs. I'd say those are some of the main skills, I say. I mean, working in a team, I think, is the cliche. I think it does help if you've played football before, because you understand the sport within. But talking about qualifications, I mean, to a degree, it's nice to know that somebody studied at university level. But there's times where you're having an interview with someone and you're trying to gauge if they're the right person, and you can feel they're just fresh out of university and they were a very good book learner, but they don't really get the gist of the whole work side of things. So it's not necessarily that if you haven't studied at university that we'd balk at that and go like, do you know what, that's not for us. I think call it a gut feeling, maybe. I think when you're in a conversation and someone's very passionate about what you do as an organization, and they can bring it into words well, and they've got the necessary experience. I mean, a good way to find out is calling references as well. I mean, I think that's a very underrated way of finding out more about the person. But I would say qualifications are nice, but that'll only get you so far. The drive and passion the individuals have for this kind of field, whether it's in the elite sports side of football or the community departments, I think that determines success more than your grades that you had for a particular thesis you wrote.
No, I agree. And that's they'll say in certain places that you obviously you need to be qualified enough, you know, and you need to have the qualifications, but it's also good to have that life experience, you know, and dealing with scenarios that are, you know, how do you deal with a parent who shouts at you? How do you deal with a budget? How do you deal with this? And it's good to, and I think it's the biggest thing is failure. You know, we're very good at when we fail something, it's like, oh, it's a win, you know, because we are, but it's not how the failure is, how you learn from the failure to make it better, instead of like, oh, I failed at this. Well, okay, so why? And I think it's Simon Sinek obviously starts with why, but he really puts the thing of the people really struggle to know what their why is in life, you know. And you know, you think you're doing so well, and then you hit a roadblock, and you're like, oh, rubbish. This is you know, like you're like, oh, I failed this, or I've had a bad day, or and we think it's small things that are going to affect us when there's so many things or so many people who are way worse off than us. But I was just interested about the journey a little bit more on the obviously the programme. But obviously the biggest thing is you say communication, but obviously in Netherlands you speak Dutch and English and kind of maybe some kind of German and different parts. But do you think that the experience of being in Belgium and England and living in Holland in the moment has actually made your language skills become a bit better, so you can actually go to maybe feel more comfortable in a different country, you know, that we're because I always think when you go abroad we really struggle to understand people, but if you make an effort then it's more helpful. I'm just going to ask, obviously I'm guessing you speak a lot about Dutch and you can speak a lot about we're speaking perfect English here, not my Scottish, but is it something that you've tried to learn, you know, more on, like your languages, you know, because taking a gamble, you know, going across to Netherlands, there's certain parts of the world where people don't speak English, but you need to learn their language. Is that something that you've tried on a personal level to become better on, so therefore you can communicate the story more of your club, but also of yourself?
Well, I just wanted to go back to your points on failure, just quickly, if I can.
Yeah.
Well, I think if you look at the most successful people on this planet, what they tend to have in common is that they failed their way to the top, I think. So just to get back to that point, I think if you're not willing to fail, you're not going to make progress. I truly believe that, simply because if you're too afraid to fail, you'll not take the risks that usually also give you the biggest rewards, I would say. But to go back to your second question, I would say growing up in Belgium, of course, with two parents from Scotland, you get English as a bonus, right, isn't it? I went to a Flemish school as well, where you learn Dutch. And from, I think, 8 years old, you get French lessons. And that kind of, I mean, puts you in a great position language-wise anyway, but I think it is a good skill to have, certainly in football, because, I mean, in UEFA alone, you've got loads of member countries, you've got clubs all over the world that you could be learning stuff from. And if you can speak to people in their local language as well, it makes things a lot easier. Like, for example, the club I work at now, if I didn't speak Flemish or Dutch, there'd be no way that I could work there, I don't think, simply because you wouldn't understand the local customs, the local sayings, how local people think. You don't understand the culture in the same way you would as if you're really, really living like them and understanding the language that they speak, let's say. So I would say it's a very important skill. And it's something I try and work on as much as I can. Currently, I'm going to take some Spanish lessons as well. So I think, I'm not sure if I'm doing that purely from a business side of thing, but just the fact that you could speak to someone in their local language opens so many doors for contact, and they're creating strong connections to people all across the world and also within the sports industry. So I think if people are considering it and they're trying to think if it's going to be valuable for them, in my experience, I would say it has really opened a lot of doors.
Yeah.
And give you a lot of interesting experiences along the way.
Yeah, because you're going to have tourists or people coming to the club, you know, like it's you see a lot of football clubs, you see your Man United, you see a lot of kind of tourists coming to watch the game, and it's great. But also, I've been to many games, and there's always the, like, I was at Atletico Madrid, the Wanda, a couple of years ago, and I was like, I was a tourist, but I got a ticket because it was, my flight was in 4 hours, and I thought, I'll have to go see Simeone before he goes anywhere. But I'm just looking at the community projects that you run, obviously it's in the city, but do you try and branch out to different parts of, like, Holland and maybe Belgium, and or is it very much this is more to think of, this is our city, or this is our place, we want to help as many people as we can first, and then help other people around, and therefore people can come and visit, you know, and then you can explain the story more,
yeah,
with different projects
the size of the club is quite important in this matter, I would say, because we go to school sometimes and there'll be people in Feyenoord shirts or Ajax shirts. I think even within our region, we're competing against the top of the top, let's say. So if it's not Ajax and Feyenoord, you'll see a lot of people in Barcelona shirts, Real Madrid shirts, United shirts, Liverpool shirts. I mean, you can name a lot. So I don't think we see it as a viable plan to branch out much further than our region, certainly because there's other clubs doing similar community activities in their regions.
Yeah.
And we don't see them as competition necessarily. Maybe on a football pitch when we play them, there is obviously that competitive element. But aside from that, and it's funny you mentioned European Football for Development Network, because they're kind of a kind of beacon through which a lot of knowledge is exchanged in our sector anyway.
Yeah.
I would say for us, the most important thing is that we're a local club. We know who we are. We don't have illusions of grandeur. We know that we are a club of this city and the only big club of this city. That the people within this region of called the Haagland, the region, let's say, that's our main focus. And I think that will be the case for the years to come, let's say. We'll take maybe places like Delft, which is close to The Hague. We'll take that as part of the package, perhaps. But I think for us, quality at the moment is what we're looking at more than branching out and looking for that quantity. I think we just want to improve our city and our region as much as we can through our club and the club that is loved by people in the vicinity. What we do try to do, though, now we're going to try and take a more international strategy, because The Hague's quite an international city.
Yeah.
What we're going to try and do is engage more of the local populace that maybe an expat, which maybe doesn't have that connection to the club, you know. So that is something we're looking into, just to make sure, again, like, everybody that's also living in that region maybe can feel connected a bit more to the club.
Yeah, and this is more of a, I'm just interested in, obviously you talk about the first team, the main, helping out, you know, like to work with the community. And then there's always, yeah, a lot of the community trusts and the in Scotland and England, you know, are related to kind of women's teams, you know, and they kind of come under the branch, and then there's sometimes it's professional. What is the kind of, how does the setup work in your club? Is it a, is the women's side professional, men's side professional, and then community, don't say separate, but part of the bubble, you know, or is it very much just because it's interesting to learn about these things, because it usually starts off with the women's side in the community, and then it kind of shifts to the, under the kind of men's or the club's philosophy.
Yeah, the club's umbrella. I've heard of that construction in different clubs, but funnily enough, because we were one of the first women's clubs in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
I think what happened was that we started a separate kind of foundation.
Yeah.
Which was specifically the women's football side of things. Then you have the community foundation, which is still a separate legal entity. And then you have the club. But recently what happened is the women's club got integrated within the club. So now the women's football is part of the company that is added in that.
Yeah.
But that's quite a good step, I think, seeing as then it opens more access to streams of funding as opposed to having to fight your way on your own to try and make these things happen. So I assume that's given us, given more work to some departments of our club, unfortunately for them, but I think for the long run it was a good decision.
Yeah.
And we'll take over the community side of the women, which we're currently in the process of doing. So the women's football team also did clinics in the city, especially tailored to young girls, for example. So that now falls under our responsibility. So we'll be doing our own stuff as a community foundation for the club, of course, but also for the women's football to try and promote that in the region.
Yeah, because that's
quite interesting as set up, let's
think. Yeah, because I'm interested, it's obviously, we could talk about this for hours, but different developments and how it all works, and the streaming, the finance and revenue, and it's just so complicated, but it's actually really simple in some parts. But I've just got one final question, and so mindset, and it seems you've got obviously a very good mindset, but how would you describe your mindset? How would you sum up what you're doing in the moment with the club, you know, from a kind of club point of view, club mindset, and then your kind of personal mindset?
I think as the mindset of the club, and don't quote me on this, but this is how I perceive it anyway, I think mindset of the club is that they want to be a front runner on certain topics. They're trying to look at certain aspects and consistently improve. We've had a bit of a rocky couple of years with foreign ownership, then them leaving, financial issues and stuff. So I think what we're trying to focus on now is that we're obviously, football will be the main thing that we have to focus on, but we're trying to make sure that what we do as an organization, that at least all these different departments are in line with each other, and trying to get all the departments to work together to get the best possible results for the football club. I think that's kind of what the mindset is, club, like doing it together and not as all separate entities, which you do see quite often, surprisingly, in football, that everybody's just doing their own thing, and when everybody starts doing their own thing, you don't have that kind of feeling that you're all doing it together. So what we're trying to develop is interdepartmental relationships. So for example, marketing in the community department has grown close, which in the future could lead to more fans buying season tickets. So there are kind of mutual benefits for both of these departments. Same for commercial department. They'll find it more interesting to be linked to certain of our things. We're doing a lot on sustainability. A lot of the people looking for investment in the club might want to see that part within the club, and then we'll take that over, the responsibility over from the commercial department. The security department and the ticketing department working closely to make sure that people that aren't allowed to come into the stadium previous mistakes from their part. So these kind of things, I would say, are the main examples of what our club's mindset is, that we're a team on the pitch, but a team off the pitch as well, if that makes sense.
And then, and yours?
My personal mindset? Well, I think the fact my grandfather, he grew up in quite a poor family in Aberdeen, quite close to the docks. And when he was 14, he started working on ships as the engineering department and stuff. And when he'd come back from work, he'd go and do evening school to catch up on all the school he missed. So he was a real hard worker. My other grandfather, he was a doctor. He was a very hard worker as well. the both of them had really good work ethic, which then transferred to my parents. And I think when I was a teenager, I didn't really grasp that as much. I was wasn't the best student, and you're kind of figuring yourself out. Some ways of learning don't benefit everyone, I suppose. And then I studied university in Belgium for a year, and that didn't work out at all. So at that point, I was a bit worried about where life was going and what my prospects were. But like I said, when I went to South Africa, that gave me a bit of an idea. Okay, I really love football. Can I do something in that? And then for me, an important thing is believing that things are possible. So when I used to be a bit pessimistic, once I started to believe that certain things were actually more realistic than I would credit them for, that was a big changing point from in my life. But even then, when I finished uni, I was still this early 20-year-old guy, still trying to figure things out. And what often helps is getting that first job, or maybe even just looking for jobs. You know, when you're looking for jobs, you start to realize, oh, I didn't realize that this was happening in football. I think since then, what I've started to do the last few years, which has really helped as well, I'm really using New Year's resolutions to focus on developing myself as an individual. The last year, I decided to stop drinking alcohol, and it was kind of because I felt the things that I wanted to achieve were sometimes being stopped because of that. So I wanted to be healthy and be healthy in my mind, my mental well-being and whatnot. And I started to realize that if I'd go on a heavy drinking session with some of my friends on a weekend, that when I was starting the week at work, I wasn't completely there. I was still suffering a bit of the brain fog. I think that's what I would say is kind of my mindset at the moment, is trying to develop and keep doing new things as well every year if I can. Trying to cut out bad habits, trying to keep good habits, build from there, and bring a bit more structure into my life. Read a lot as well, seems to be doing the trick as well, like reading a lot of non-fiction books, for example.
Yeah.
Just treating yourself a bit more kindly. I think I would be just brutal for myself and sometimes not appreciate what I have done quite well since I was a kid, for example.
Yeah.
More, try not to focus too much on negative parts of growing up and learning. And I would say also being grateful for you, but I went through a period where I was feeling a bit unhappy about certain things and I couldn't figure out why it was, but I was always comparing myself to other people, partially maybe due to social media. But actually, what I've started to do more and more lately is focus on what I do have and not what I don't have, basically. That's all seems to be contributing to good mental well-being at the moment, and I think it seems to help me in my career as well. I think my mind feels a bit more settled. I feel a bit more fresh at work. I'm feeling a bit more creative. I'm sleeping enough. I'm going to the gym. I'm doing kickboxing and stuff. So I'm trying to keep busy and find a good work-life balance. I think that's,
yeah.
I'm sure that's a mindset. It's just what I'm doing, I suppose.
Yeah. No, thanks again.
A big long list.
No, thanks again, Lewis, for talking to us.
Yeah.